yeah, yeah. Hey, hey, people, my name is Mr. Smart. Some of the girls all say, I am a man with a great heart. Everywhere I go, I gotta put on my show. Let you all know, I am Mr. Smart. I am Mr. Smart.
Well, welcome back to the Requiem for Rock show. I hope this is your host, Mr. Smart, with that little intro song and the same words. This is Mr. Smart. Well, I hope you enjoyed last show, a couple of weeks ago, when I looked at the day the music died. The examination of the reactionary response to rock and roll music at the time of that icy cornfield, that rock stars in the snow Midwest night. At the risk of repetition, dear listeners, I remind you that the... I got a little techno there. Okay, here we go. I remind you that the hell-raising rebel rockers of the first wave of rock and roll had at this point been nullified around that time of the crash in 1959. They were either dead or in jail or in the army or in disgrace. So the original musical rock and roll revolutionaries were being supplanted at this time by the new squeaky clean, wholesome, and above all marketable Bobby sound. Now, speaking of February snow and ice, last week's hiatus was due to the bleak February weather. And we got a little bit more of that again now, but I managed to make it up to the studio here because... I'm loyal to my listeners, and I hope you're loyal to me here at Requiem for Rock. So I left off at the last show with a song by the first of the Bobbies, of that Bobby sound. The singer who replaced Buddy Holly on the Winter Dance Party tour, Bobby V. Bobby V was the link to the Wall Street of music, 1619 Broadway in Manhattan, the Brill Building, the matrix of corporate rock. So tonight, listeners, we will look at the Brill Building concept, the business model, the artists, who were interchangeable ones, like car parts, and the songwriting crews that wrote time clock hits for the new Dick Clark, Beaver Cleaver world of popular music after 1960. And that world of popular music revolved around 1619 Broadway, the Brill Building. For like my beloved 706 Union Avenue in Memphis, Sun Records and the Big Bang of rock and roll. The Brill Building was in itself a Big Bang location. A counter shot from the hypocritically shocked middle class establishment and the music profiteers. And from that counter shot, it conquered and profited in imperialist fashion. Informing culture and shaping moondoggy beach blanket bop norms of youth for in that era. So to lead off, let's hear one more from that appropriately named replacement singer and Brill Building operative, Bobby V. Last week I played his Take Good Care of My Baby, which was penned by Brill songwriter Carole King, who we'll talk about later. Bobby V stood on a Dallas, Texas stage awaiting JFK on November 22nd, 1963. So like a musical CIA spook, he infiltrated the Winter Dance Party in 1959. So appropriately, here is his hit, The Night Has a Thousand Eyes.
They say that you're a runaround lover, though you say it isn't so. But if you put me down for another, I'll know, believe me, I'll know. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help but see. If you aren't true to me, so remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes. Say that you're at home when you phone me, and how much you really care. Though you keep telling me that you're lonely, I'll know if someone is there. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help but see if you are true to me. So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes. One of these days you're gonna be sorry, 'cause your game I'm gonna play. And you find out without really trying, each time that my keys astray. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes will see me through. And no matter what I do, I could never disguise all my little white lies. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes. So a thousand eyes.
The Brill Building at Broadway and 49th Street in Manhattan was built in 1931 and opened for commercial space at the height of the Depression, and it stood almost empty, only desperate apple sellers in its shadow. It was originally not called the Brill Building, and it bore the name of the builder's son. But its lone occupant on the first floor was a haberdashery. Now here is the important aspect sociologically, dear listeners. The only thing many New Yorkers, in the grips of a brutal poverty-grinding depression, the only thing they had left was a hope of a living, writing hard luck songs. The brother can you spare a dime stuff. These songwriters needed a cheap, very cheap place, separate from their Manhattan hovels, to plunk their pianos, which was the main songwriting tool of the day. Well, the brothers Brill, who ran the haberdashery, well, these guys were no slouch hats themselves. They saw that this building was gradually, bit by bit, being rented by these rejects from the uptown Tin Pan Alley scene. That old ragtime and vaudeville publishing houses that existed uptown and where most of the songwriting had been done prior to then. So the Mad Hatters of the Brills, they bought the whole building and began to rent it out piecemeal, just little pieces of it, to these struggling songwriters. And this location, a large office building, eventually housed hundreds of rock worker bees. Songwriters, singers, publicists, PR people, engineers, administrators, promo people, all the cogs that brought the heart-throbbing mega-hit Sugar songs to Susie and Biff's mono picnic turntables of 1960. But back in the 1930s, the Brill Building only churned out the hard Scrabble songs, the mocking Brother Can You Spare a Dime. Ironically, it came from that castle of capitalist music to come. This song enraged the capitalists of the day that had brought about the economic ruin of the Depression. And they attempted to even suppress this particular song and railed against it in their stooge newspapers that they had at the time. Yet, perhaps this song that I want to play for you was one of the most important political songs of its era, even of all time. Especially in American culture and Canadian, by extension. Because this song contributed to public cynicism at the old order of rank, unregulated capitalism, and a swing to the left and social engineering with FDR, with Roosevelt, in the 1932 election came about not long after this song was released. And it certainly had an influence on that election. So I hope you enjoy this one from 1931, Charlie Palloy, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? Mm-hmm.
built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell. Full of that Yankee Doodle Dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember, they called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember, I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Well, that was Charlie Palloy with Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? One of the most powerful political songs ever recorded, and something we should all listen to again today, I think, as we're heading back down that road. Into the 1940s, the Brill Building evolved into a corporate music machine, sort of a Detroit-style assembly line of hits. Songwriters would be in one office, and when they completed a song, they just took it to the arrangers upstairs. It was then assigned to interchangeable singers, some of the singers that I'll be playing tonight. Then the song would be recorded with studio musicians, session musicians, and then shopped by singing PR marketers. They would actually like sing the song, you know, because they didn't want to play the whole song to the publishers and record companies. And they'd just sort of sing ditties from the song right in the office there in the Brill Building. So they would take it up to these publishers and record companies that were also there in that building. So many well-known and very talented artists came from this one building and music model with awesome songwriting teams, and we'll take a look at some of those tonight. In the 1940s big band scene, the Brill Building produced greats like the Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey orchestras. But one of the ruling artists out of Brill was Benny Goodman. That clarinet proto-rocker, certainly one of my favorites, who wasn't a rocker but was a proto-rocker from the 1930s and 40s. Even with his clarinet, you know, he would rock out on a clarinet, but really sort of foreshadowing rock solos that we heard later on guitars and such. He proved white men could jump and swing. So listen to the blues jump sound. Hear the boogie-woogie that became rock and roll on a 1 o'clock jump. From Benny Goodman.
And now, featuring Fletcher Henderson at the piano, Toots Mondello at the saxophone, Ziggy Elman at the trumpet, Arthur Bernstein at the bass, we play the 1 o'clock jump. Thank you.
So that gives you a taste of Benny Goodman, you know, one of the original rockers. You know, you listen to the way he rocked out that clarinet. It was really something, one of the greatest of all time. And as I said, a model, and got people up on the dance floor, got them dancing, right, and got them ready for rock and roll to come. In the 1950s, so we move up in the 30s when we heard Brother Can You Spare a Dime, then a little Benny Goodman, the big band era of the 40s. Into the 1950s at the Brill Building, Bobby Darin started in the Brill Building as a songwriter, writing songs